Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Welcome to the IGN UK podcast. It's me, Simon Cardy, with Matt Pursley.
Hello.
And Jesse Gomez.
Hey there.
Hello. You're looking smiley today, Jesse. What's the problem?
You're just always able to put a smile on my face right before the podcast begins, Cardy.
It's because your face looks mad.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. I try to please wherever I go. June's here, isn't it? That's come around quick. Getting hot. That means E3 is very close. It's actually next week, isn't it?
Yeah.
That has snuck up on me. I don't know if it snuck up on you, because you'd probably be doing a lot of work around it, but for me, it snuck up quickly.
No, I've been in prep mode for at least a week now.
Yeah, I don't think I'm ready, but at the same time, I'm excited, because it feels like last year we didn't really get a proper E3, did we?
Not really.
Was that digital only as well?
There wasn't E3. There was just no E3, yeah.
Oh,
like,
right.
It wasn't called that. There was
Platform holders. Yeah. I mean, obviously, E3, for everybody at home, they're actually seeing the platform holders rather than E3, because E3 is a big building with stuff inside it that we have to report on. But this is the first year, really, that E3 feels like a proper event for everybody, not just people that turn up to the building.
Exactly. It's exciting there. There's a lot to see. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about that later. First, an update. I'm sure some people will have realised it's only 5 weeks until episode 600, which also seems to have come around very quickly. It does not seem almost 2 years ago that we were doing podcast 500.
That live is really in crazy.
A sweaty room. as you can probably understand, we won't be doing anything in a sweaty room this time, because even if we were allowed, I don't feel like, you know, it's not the right time to hold a big event, is it?
I
don't feel like people feel comfortable coming. So what we're going to do is, we will do a live show at some point, whether that's at Christmas time or like this time next year for like 6:50. Like, we'll do something. We'll do a live show because we enjoy doing them. But we will, the week of podcast 600, have a special episode of sorts. We haven't done it yet. We're not 100% sure what it's going to be. We have a strong idea what it's going to be. And I guarantee it's something that at least I'm going to say 60% of our listeners will enjoy.
That's a high percentage, in my opinion.
Really? Yeah. We can go lower. I don't know. It's, you know, we're doing a lot of bonus. Maybe over the next course of a few weeks, we'll tease what it is. We won't give away completely what it is until close to the time. But, you know, if you have listened to our podcast and maybe certain spin-offs of our podcast, it may be something that you might be interested in. But who knows?
It's all up in the air at the moment.
It's almost kind of set in stone. It's the opposite, but we're just teasing it slowly. But anyway, let's talk about what we have been doing, because that's more interesting than talking about things we haven't done yet. Operation Tango is a game. When it was first announced a couple of months back, I think, in a PlayStation blog post, I was like, this looks like it's for me. It's free on PS Plus this month, so...
Only for PlayStation 5 users, unfortunately.
Only for PlayStation 5 users. Fantastic confirmation there from Matt Pursley. This is why he's the news hound. The wolf at the door, as we call him. we've been playing this game together, Matt. I think there's about 6 missions in total, you said, and we've done 4 of them. Mm-hmm. We just did the 4th mission at lunchtime. This is, I'm personally finding it a very fun game. It's slightly complicated.
And stressful.
Yeah, it's kind of a, so the premise is, it's a co-op game, and it's only co-op online, because the whole premise is you don't see the other person's screen. It's very much like Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes, if you've played that at all. I don't know if you know that game, Jesse, at all.
Yeah.
But for anyone who doesn't know that game, it basically, someone's a bomb diffuser and the other person has the manual to defuse the bomb, so you're giving them the instructions, and it's very tense, and to, you know, you've got to play those sort of games with someone who doesn't frustrate you easily, I think, otherwise friendships will be ruined. Luckily, well, I'm speaking myself. Matt doesn't frustrate me. I don't.
Are you sure not after today's session? Which, well, in which case, I was unable to explain to you what I needed you to do.
We got there in the end. Look, we didn't get a game. Actually, we did get a couple of game overs, but you know, we didn't get many.
Yeah. But the premise is
Of Operation Tango is similar. To keep talking, nobody explodes except one of you. In this case, I've been playing the agent or the spy character, and Matt has been the hacker.
And we work together.
You are my cue.
We work together to try and solve mysteries doesn't seem the right way. There's a mission with an objective, and we have to work together to find it. And I'm the guy that sits back at HQ doing all the Matrixy stuff, and Cardi gets to be in the actual. Are they exotic locations? I don't know what these locations look like.
Yeah, because you haven't even seen my screen. Like, a couple of them have just been like high tech facility buildings. Mm-hmm. One of them was on like a South African like modern train, which was quite cool. That was quite a nice setting, quite sunny. It almost feels weirdly like in my bits anyway. I don't know how because I don't know how your screen looks for this game. Feels like a game that's almost. I don't know if they originally built it with VR in mind. It feels like almost a VR game at times.
This is a question I was going to ask you because I genuinely don't know. Is it a first person game from your perspective?
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
This is amazing how you guys don't know, like, the other side, like, at all. That is mad.
So, from your perspective, it's a bit like, it's a 3D level game. It's like a first person, for lack of a better term, like a first person shooter, but without the shooting, right? And you're exploring environments. Mm-hmm. From my perspective, I'm in essentially a computer and I've got windows that I can open. And I've seen bits of what Cardi can see because I can access security cameras in levels. Oh. And so I can pan around, but they are in very small boxes and in black and white and very film grained up. So
you're in like the Tron world or something.
Yeah,
and you're hacking.
Exactly. So that you open these windows, but they're all linked with kind of like the windows are in like a 3D space with lots of kind of. The way I explained it to Cardi was, you know, when the PlayStation 2 boots up.
And
You get like the lots of translucent cubes that float around on that screen.
This is getting me very excited.
I know. I thought you'd like this, your PlayStation 2 hands. That's what my world in inverted commas looks like. It's like floating bricks and stuff like that. Yeah. And when you open the right bricks, you go to windows like on a PC.
That sounds
and
perfect
I can see
for
things.
VR. Just the way you described already.
Yeah, probably. And so my thing is so if Cardi needs to get in an elevator, like if, or should I say the agent needs to get in an elevator, I'm the one that can like open them up, send them to the right floor. Mm. There was a mission we were playing where, Cardi needs to get on a specific computer, but needs to be given access. And I can assign him off, like, I can look through the employee database. And I can assign, like, a character to him, so we're now using false IDs and stuff like that. So that's what my role is.
Yeah, it's very fun. Like, this is my sort of game. I like puzzle games, and I love it. Any excuse to play a co-op game, I'm into it. So I think each level takes between 30 to 45 minutes, roughly, is what we've done. So you've probably got about 4 to 5 hours to play through the game, but that's only on one side, so you basically got two games in it, so more like 8 to 10 really.
Is it a continued story, or can you just jump between missions whenever you want?
It's a continued story, so you have to do them in order. I mean, story is a very loose term, like there's not like a gripping narrative. You're basically just doing individual like spy missions. There is an overarching villain sort of character though that we've stumbled into, which may be of interest to you, Jesse. His name is Cypher.
That's so cool. I loved it. As soon as you start explaining, it's like Matrixy and like Tron-esque. Yeah. It's like there has to be a cipher in
for anybody that doesn't get this joke. Yeah, for anybody that doesn't get the joke, Jesse's username is generally Cypher Hacker. So he is the bad guy of this video game.
I just want to clarify that is I made that when I was in year 7 for PSN. Everything else is as you'll expect if you follow me online. But
okay.
It is now, anyway. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, I think the thing that we've discovered that we quite like, there's a lot of variety, and I'm not saying it's quite It Takes Two in the fact that it's constantly coming up with new mechanics, but it is on a similar path. They're obviously not, it's not a high budget game. It's very much an indie style project.
Yeah.
But every mission has been a different type of setting. Like one was on a train, and it was about kind of trying to find someone on the train. Yeah. And I got sets of data that I could tell Cardi, and Cardi could use that to try and find the person on the train.
Is there like one set path for like each mission? So
Yeah, it's quite linear.
Okay, right, right.
But what I don't know is, and I'm wondering, and I assumed it maybe would, like, because we haven't gone back and replayed any missions. Like, I imagine they maybe mix up the puzzles within them, so it's not the same solution every time. So, like, there's puzzles which I'm sure, like, I don't know, like, there's one where we have to stop a train, you have to do a certain combination of things in order. I'm sure that order is mixed up each time.
Yeah. Which, but, like, the way you get to your... Sorry? The way you get to your objective, Cardi, is that, like, are there opportunities like, can I go left, can I go right, can I crawl through here?
Not
or?
Really. There's not really any side stuff or choice. It's pretty much do this, do that. I think, like, it's not the sort of game, maybe once you've played it through once on both sides, you're not going to replay it over and over, unless you want to play it with someone new who hasn't played it before, because that is the downside of these games. You do need someone to play it with. You can't play it by yourself at all. Yeah. You can't even play it local co-op. You have to have separate PlayStations online to play it with.
Is it particularly difficult then from just like both of your sides? Yeah.
So it has been at times, like, I will give it that. Like, maybe like the first mission is pretty, like, it's a tutorial essentially. Like, you're like, okay, I get this. It's pretty simple. There's no real stress to it, not much time limit. The most recent stuff we've been doing, it's very, like, it's stressful. Like,
I can visualize, like, Matt's job and how that could be difficult, but in terms of Cardi, you as the agent, like, what are you actually, how are you interacting with the map? Like, what kind of puzzles are you coming across?
It's different from mission to mission, and it's different from like the start of the mission to the end of the mission. Like I say, the variety is really good. And also, it does flip the tables a bit. So, for example, in the mission that we were just playing, Cardi, were you using a computer to help me hack?
So, yeah, I was at a computer terminal that had like five different computers I could use for different stages, while you were sat behind me in like a Matrix style machine, kind of plugged in. So you were kind of inside the server as a all you were to me was a yellow circle for that whole mission.
It's so, but the other thing that I do quite like about it is that it doesn't really tell you. You get like a rough sort of thing, like, you've got to get this key, like, you are looking for a data key. Yeah. But it doesn't really explain how the mechanics work, so a lot of it is just kind of like, and quite often you're on a timer.
Oh, so it is like timed throughout the mission?
Yeah, a lot of it is timed. Yeah. And like,
I would be shit at this game. I want to play it. I would absolutely panic.
But that's the thing. You need clear communication. And you need... the hardest thing is like... Because like, it's that sort of thing where I'm seeing something and I'm going, right, so if you turn left, but my left is not Matt's left.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, and you have to like almost say like, oh, in this room, is there a wall that's a blue color? Okay, so let's call that north.
Okay.
Like, sometimes it's not even as simple as that. Like, sometimes just I'll get a window that comes up and I have to explain, like, there are five boxes in this window and some of them have got what look like ladders on them. Some of them have got what look like smiley faces. And then Cardi has to figure out what from that information that corresponds to in his world. Mm. And then we figure out how those two link together.
And a lot of the time it will just be me going, yeah, yeah, I get it. And then I've done it. And like, Matt's probably just wondering, I don't know what the hell he's done there or what he's worked out. But we're through, so who cares?
Are there methods of communicating in-game that don't require a microphone, or is that like an absolute necessity?
Microphone.
I think you need to speak.
I'm fairly sure the main menu says you have to have your microphone turned on before it'll like even boot the game.
I mean, that's certainly fair, because you would be fucked otherwise.
Yeah, it's necessary. But I think they do have a cool thing in-game. Not that, I don't know, it's a weird game to play with strangers, but it could be quite interesting as well. I think they do have a link on the main menu to like a place where you can find people to match up with if you don't have someone.
So there is like a Discord server.
Yeah, no. I think it might link straight to a Discord.
Yeah, and that's how you'd find someone else. Like, I say, it's important to remember, like, this is quite a budget game. Like, I don't think it looks bad or anything. Like, it's got a really stylized art style. So, it, like, but it's fundamentally a very low budget game. I just think what they've done is, I love games that are thrifty, that use kind of, like, the small budget to the best of their effect. And I can't think of a game that with a budget this low that has done so well in recent memory.
It has made me want to play Keep Talking Nobody Explodes again, because I have it, I think I have it on PSVR, I haven't played it in a long time. Okay. They do the cool thing, which is one person is the bomb diffuser in VR and the other person just has the TV screen as the manual, so you can play
that's
like
really
that.
Cool.
I want to play that. Like, I love these sort of games, and there's not enough of those, I think, just pure co-op games like that. Like, we've had It Takes Two recently, we've had this. It's good to see. I'm well into
it. So overall, like, high recommendation?
I'd recommend.
Yeah?
I'd recommend it a lot. It's very fun. Not, you know, and it's free if you own a PS5, so why not?
Oh, it's also got a Friends Pass system, so if one of your friends has got it on PS5, but you've only got a PS4, I think you could get the PS4 Friend Pass and still play with them, because it's got cross...
Oh, so it is available on the PlayStation 4.
Yeah, it's just not as part of the PS Plus subscription this month.
Those bastards.
Yeah. So you have to... But I'm pretty sure it's... I haven't looked. I'm pretty sure it's only like £15 or so. Like, it's not an expensive game. But yeah, I'd recommend it a lot. We haven't got to the end yet. We thought the last one we did was quite hard, and we've got two more levels to go, so we'll see where that goes. Yeah. But,
I wish I could see that live in action, because that does sound hilarious.
Oh, God. If we did that as a live play, that would be a mess.
Yeah. That is a little secret. That is not what Podcast 600 is. But, yeah, it's very fun. Jesse, you've been playing a game which I'd literally not heard of until you told me what it was this morning. So what is this horror game with critters in it?
So this is a game that just released yesterday. It's a little indie horror game. It's called Critters for Sale. And it can be described as a compilation of like five short surreal horror games, or horror stories rather, and they're named Snake, Goat, Monkey, Dragon, and Spider. And each of these stories is set across different areas and locations. So, for example, Snake is set in New York during 2033, whilst Goat is set in Jordan in 923 AD. So it's a bunch of different timelines here.
Okay.
And it's kind of like, it's a mix of like a visual novel and a point and click. You've got like puzzle solving and multiple endings throughout some of the story. So it's basically an adventure game, I guess, if you just want to use that term. But I think what stuck out to me is that, like, I was browsing Steam one day and I came across the demo for it. And the thumbnail is what stuck out immediately, because it has an image of Michael Jackson on it. Or rather, it used to have an image of Michael Jackson as the thumbnail, like this really kind of creepy looking one bit, like black and white Michael Jackson image on the thumbnail. So I downloaded it, and the only thing that was playable was the snake story. And I loaded it up, and it opens with Michael Jackson sending you a text at like midnight, asking him to meet him at this shady club in New York at like 4 in the morning.
And you agree?
What's this? What's going on here?
No, it's absolutely, it's absolutely, it's absolutely bizarre. Like, the best way I can describe it is if like you mixed like Black Mirror and the Twilight Zone, but you took like a shit ton of like mushrooms or acid, and like that's the stories.
It's, what? This is not why I thought it'd be. Why do you always do this to us?
if you've seen the horror game World of Horror, then you kind of know what you might be getting into. Like, a lot of these stories involve like time travel, like astral planes, old gods, like the ending of worlds and stuff like that.
Is it very creepypasta then?
Basically. It's like, it's honestly truly mad. And aside from, I guess, like the overarching plot of the different stories, what really stands out is the visuals. They are really creepy in a way. I haven't really seen a lot of games like mess around with this, like kaleidoscope-esque effects. You have like shimmering characters and morphing faces, and it's all really put on display really well on that first story with Michael Jackson, which sounds so bizarre to say.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to let you carry on for a bit, but I do have multiple questions in my mind right now. But,
But like, it's... like, just boiling it down to, like, in a very simple term, it is just, like, your kind of basic adventure puzzle game, essentially. You know, it's just point and click. You're just going through, talking to different characters and stuff, like, solving a few light puzzles. But the main hook is these five short horror stories, and they're so surreal, bizarre, and disturbing. And it's not, they're not too long, but they do have, like, multiple endings, so you'd want to replay them. And it's only, like, I think, £7, and it's available on Windows, on Steam. So if you wanted to experience them, the demo is out there. You could play the first story. It has like 6 endings to it. But yeah, it's just mad. It's so weird.
Here are my questions.
Okay.
One. Where to start? Is it genuinely scary? Is it a scary game?
I mean, for me, it wasn't. I had my partner sitting next to me playing through the first story, and they found it quite creepy and scary. And I just want to preface this. If you suffer from like epilepsy or something, stay far away from this game.
Okay.
Like, you're not going to make it through like the main menu, just because of the visuals and stuff.
B, are these sort of like interlinked stories? Is there one big story connecting these together?
There, it does have like an overarching theme, and because it's set across different time periods, they all do link up to each other, but you can play them in like separate ways. And all the different endings do kind of connect with each other. But yeah, there is, they have their own separate stories, but they do connect at the end of it, I guess.
Okay. See, you've described, like, what's, is it like a 3D game? Like, what sort of art style?
So,
is it first person?
I mean, you do play from a first person perspective. Like, if you've ever played, you know, a visual novel or just a general adventure game, like, you can kind of picture, like, you know, you'll be standing in one particular environment. You can click on different things to talk to different characters or pick up an item and stuff. Like, you'll click on a staircase and be like, do you want to proceed? And then, you know, you'll go forth and whatnot. It's very basic in how it plays, but the obvious hook is just how downright bizarre and crazy it is. And I keep talking about the Michael Jackson story. There's four other stories to play that equally as bizarre. Another one finds you in, I think, like going to like this Doomsday Casino, and you have a timer. It starts at 10, and then the game actually finishes, or that story finishes at 12 at night, and that's like when the world is going to end. So you're trying to solve this puzzle before that happens.
And does Mick Jagger turn up in that one?
Honestly, there's a ton of like weird references to like other horror, like creepypastas as well, I think, mm-hmm. and just like other bizarre things. It's so hard to describe, and I don't want to talk about it too much because, like, what happens in these stories and how they can end is just so, it's so mad, and it's best experienced yourself.
I had a look at the Steam page because I was intrigued by what you were saying, and obviously I think that, for anybody who doesn't know necessarily what 1-bit graphics are, it's kind of, it's black and white stuff that looks like it was made, like, printed off on, you know, the old Game Boy printer you used to be able to get. That's kind of the effect you get, right? It's very, very simplistic, kind of drawn with single pixels in black and white. So it's got a very creepy kind of edge to it, especially those, like you say, those lighting effects where it strobes.
Yeah, and
it's, like, done very well.
And what, like, sticks out, because it's obviously not static, it's like it's all smooth, you know, 60 frames and stuff when you're playing it on your computer, and like just everything stands out, and how smooth it is, it just adds to how, like, creepy the overall presentation is. It's just downright bizarre, and you're like, you're dealing with these, like, inhabitants that are, like, you know, outside of Earth, and you're dealing with demons and, like, gods and stuff, and it's just crazy. I mean, Michael Jackson is in the game, like,
yeah, that's a very surely they've not got permission from the Jackson estate for that.
No, I mean, what happens to Michael Jackson in that story, or what can happen to him, is crazy.
Jesse, like, is it legitimately Michael Jackson, as in he's called Michael Jackson by name, or is it just the face?
No, it is Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson sends you a text saying, come to this club at 4 a.m. because I need to talk to you. And you
from
can
Michael.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. No one's doing that. Like,
you
why
can,
are
the
you
thing
doing
is, you can
that?
Ignore the text, and, you know, that will lead you down another path and stuff.
You.
Yeah. But the hook is experiencing, like, this one timeline to get this one ending, and you're like, what's some of the other crazy shit I can experience if I try to go for, like, the other three or four endings during these stories? And like I said, it's not much of a long game, but I think for the price of £7, if you're into, you know, your surreal, creepy horror stuff, I think the presentation is quite unique. Gameplay is fairly simple. Like, a few of the puzzles can be a little bit difficult, but I think it's still worth checking out for such a cheap price as well.
I did just search to have a look, and yeah, I will confirm that art style is creepy. I'm not sure that is yeah, there's something quite, I don't know, satanic about it all, which some people find fun. Don't get me wrong. I like a good, like a bit of, I was about to say I like a bit of Satanism. I don't know if I'd go that far.
Have you got intriguing. A goat on your windowsill holding up the fingers?
Intriguing. anyway, that, yeah, that's another interesting one. It's the, like, sort of the indie game show today, isn't it? We're talking delving deep. We've got another one to talk about, Matt. A game which you've got me very excited for. I saw, I think, I don't know if it might have just been in Slack, I saw Tom Marks talking about it as well yesterday. A new game called Grifflands, which you got me with the elevator pitch of Slay the Spire meets Mass Effect.
Yep, that's pretty much it. So Grifflands has actually technically been around for 2 years in early access. It's from a company called Clay, who always make very, very good games. So these are the guys behind Mark of the Ninja, behind the old Shank games, behind...
They did Don't Starve, didn't they?
Yeah, Don't Starve is probably their biggest hit. And then Oxygen Not Included, I think, is their kind of colony
management.
Oh,
Invisible Ink as well.
Yeah, that Invisible Ink. Like, and you'll probably notice from that roster of games, they make very, very different games each time they do, but there's always this constant bar of quality that runs through them. And also, they like cartoon art style. It's never the same art style from game to game, but they like 2D, kind of very brightly coloured cartoon stuff.
Yeah.
So Grifflands is their roguelike, I suppose, is the starting point. I must say, I have not died yet in my run. I think it's quite a forgiving one.
Legend.
I don't think it's because I'm legendary. I just think it's because it's a very story-heavy, like RPG roguelike.
Okay.
It's being fairly kind to you because it would be very, very frustrating to lose. I think losing should be an important part of the run rather than just something you keep doing over and over.
Right.
But to lay it out, if anybody's played Slay the Spire, they will understand what I mean by a deck-building roguelike, and it's that all your combat stuff is done using a deck of cards. So you'd have, like, let's say a deck of 40 cards, and at the start of each turn, because it's turn-based combat, you'll randomly draw 5 cards, and that'll be what you can do that turn. The thing about Grifflands is because it is a science fiction RPG set in... The easiest way for me to describe it is if you can imagine if Mass Effect was closer to Firefly than it is kind of Star Trek. So it's much more kind of Mandalorian style, out on kind of rougher planets where everybody's kind of, they're either aligned to the local kind of militia or they're part of a bandit group, or, you know, your best friend runs the local bar, which is where you can go and rest and get your health back.
It's a dirty space game, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's a dirty space game. And the first character you get to play as is basically an adventurer for hire, essentially a bounty hunter.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about it is that, yes, you can fight your way through things, which is your fight deck, but you also have your negotiation deck, which is if you don't want to fight people, if you want to, as you would do in Mass Effect, talk to people, try and talk them down, you use your negotiation deck, which has completely different cards in it. And instead of taking damage from your health, you have what's called like your core argument, which is effectively your character's health. But if your core argument gets destroyed, if all of that health goes away, you don't die and you don't have to restart the run again. It's just that you've essentially run out of arguments. You can't argue with anybody anymore.
So if you, like, lose your argument, does that then result in you having to fight?
If you were stuck in a situation where then that person goes, like, you've not got a leg to stand on, mate, I'm just going to stab you up now, then yes. But because it's an RPG, there's lots of different ways of doing it. But I find this two deck system is very, very interesting. So the fight system is kind of Final Fantasy or Pokemon like in presentation.
Yeah,
you have like your enemy on the right side of the screen, there's you on the left. You get party members, so at the moment I've got a dog that's with me,
and so it's almost a bit closer to, did you play SteamWorld Quest?
Yeah, there's definitely a little bit. I think this is a much better RPG than SteamWorld Quest was. I was actually a bit disappointed by Quest.
I know what you mean. I've had a bit, almost a bit too simple.
Yeah. So this, I feel, has got, because you've also got conversations that happen before, like you've got Mass Effect like conversations. It's not voiced, it's not got that budget. I should point out, this game is £15, and at the moment you can get it for like 12 because it's on like introductory discount because it just went 1.0 today.
Is it only on PC?
It's on PC, Xbox, PlayStation, and Switch.
Okay, and I just want to quickly
play this on Switch.
Mm-hmm. That does sound like a good shout, but just want to loop back because you mentioned the dialogue and stuff and compare it to Mass Effect. But in terms of how dialogue takes place in the game, is it similar to, you know, Disco Elysium where you're trying, like, with these cards, are you like tackling different?
No. So what it is, so when you go up and talk to people in the world, you'll have a few kind of dialogue options that you want to do.
Okay.
That then basically is, imagine like Disco Elysium, you have kind of like their, imagine like a text. When you're making text messages, so your stuff comes up in bubbles on the left, theirs comes up in bubbles on the right. If you need to, an example I can give you is there's a mission where you have to help this woman stop a loan shark from taking their money. And so what you can do is either you can go over there and shank the hell out of them, which is where you'd use your battle deck, or you can use your negotiation deck to organize, can you give them an extra week on their loan?
Right, so Sorry,
when you start using the, I know what you're asking and I'm getting around to it.
Okay.
When you use the negotiation deck, it's not like you're using specific arguments because you've already made your argument clear at the start.
It's predetermined.
Yeah. Okay, so you go in and basically there's the purple options in the dialogue for negotiation. There's orange options for fighting. Right. If you go in and you're like, hey, my friend wants an extra week on their loan. Can you do anything about it? And then you choose to negotiate. It then goes into what is essentially a negotiation battle, in which case there are no actual, because the amount of cards it would have to come up with, because they'd have to be different for every single situation.
Yeah.
So it becomes much more abstract. Okay. But what you have there is it's only ever one-on-one, whereas combat can be multiple people on multiple people.
Okay.
But like what you have is cards like decoy arguments, which are, you know how in Hearthstone, if you don't want to take damage to your main character, you can play a card, which is a guard card, and therefore the enemy always has to attack that guard card and destroy that before it can then damage you.
Right.
Decoy arguments are a bit like that. You play a decoy argument, and it's essentially like suddenly changing the topic in your debate.
Okay, I get you.
And people then having to stop you from talking about that before they can get back to telling you that your core argument is shit.
Okay.
So it's got all of that, and there are loads of interesting cards. You can, those cards are split up into like sweet talk and threatening kind of cards. And so the threatening cards do more kind of base damage, but the sweet talk cards are a little bit more sneaky.
Right.
And so if you could defeat them through then, they're basically give up and just go, hey, all right, then I get it. I'll give them the extra week on the loan in this example. If you were to battle them instead, they always have kind of like a point where at 10% health, they'll just give up, and then you can choose to murder them and get them out of the picture or let them surrender.
Yeah.
If you murder them, you'll always get like a special reward. Like maybe they could use a cool grenade and you now get to put that into your deck. If you let them go, it does the telltale thing of they will remember that you fucked them up, and they won't be your friend anymore, because everybody in the world can be a friend or an enemy to you.
Okay.
And so if you annoy someone that is a trader, they'll start putting their prices up. So when you go and try and buy cards from them, they'll be just like, we're going to charge you 50% extra on everything because you ruined our day.
Do they remember that over runs? Is that persistent?
I don't know.
Change?
Because I've not failed the run yet.
Yeah. That's interesting.
I have no idea. I'd imagine it would be fresh, because I think the idea would be is like you'd learn, okay, on this run, I made friends with this person. Because sometimes it will be like, you've got a choice to do a quest for this person or a quest for this person, but you can only do one of them.
Okay.
And the person you don't do it for will get very upset with you. So I think it must reset between runs, because then you'd know, hey, I did it for this person, but I didn't like the bonuses I got from this person, so I want to try it for the other person.
With every encounter, have you always been presented with the option to either talk or fight?
Pretty much, yeah. You get, when you take on a job, all the jobs are mostly given to you from like the main bar. It will tell you kind of on the mission screen, like, is this a negotiation or is this a battle situation?
Mm.
I get the impression that if the job is go and kill this person, like it's actually a bounty, I imagine it will probably try and suggest that you do that. But every single one I've done so far, I've always had the option to negotiate. And that even includes like a bandit finds you on the road, because so it has a world map, and that's how you get to different places. But as you watch your character, almost like Indiana Jones style, walk around the map, you'll get halfway. A bit like if you've played Monkey Island, how Sword Fighters would just stop you halfway through the map change.
Yeah.
And someone will turn up. I have told bandits, please just go away. And because I won the negotiation, they just went away.
I'm into this a lot. This sounds like my cup of tea. Sounds like a perfect Switch game with the...
Yeah.
Like, the Euros are coming... The Test cricket summer has just started, having that on in the background while playing that.
Yeah,
absolutely. That sounds perfect to me. Any idea of like how long it is? I know it's hard with a rogue.
Yeah,
sort of
I
game.
Don't. So I've just done the first boss, and there's days. So like at the end of the day, you'll go to bed and it'll reset all your health on both your argument and your character health.
Okay.
But also when I killed the boss, it unlocked the second campaign, which for as far as I know is set in the same world. but the second campaign you play an ex-spy, I think, who has a completely different storyline.
But you're still continuing your first campaign and they're still
new. No, you can have two runs going at any one time. So as long as you can have up to, there are three characters. So once you've unlocked the third character, you could have three runs going at any one time that are different characters.
Okay.
Okay. I'm into this a lot. I'm definitely going to... I might even download this today, seeing as it is out today.
I've realised it's taken me quite a long time to explain that, and it's one of those games where you don't realise how deep it is when you start playing, because it does just, like...
sounds interesting.
Yeah. It looks like it's cards. Spy Across with Mass Effect, and it wins, so there you go. Yeah, we've done it. We've done it already.
And it's 20% off on Steam right now.
Yeah. So I've got it on Steam. It plays obviously really nice on PC, as all card games do, but yeah, I think on anything, it would be a winner. I love this game so much. I've fallen for it so hard.
No, it does sound genuinely
it's
fun.
Weird. I feel like I did hear of it a while ago, because like you said, it's been in sort of early access for two years, like almost like a Hades sort of deal. Yeah. Like, I feel like I have heard of it, but at the same time, I don't know why I wasn't into it if I had done, because this
You know
like
what? I think it might have been announced at like E3 as part of, you know, kind of like when platform holders will just have like, oh, and there's a little indie bit. And so maybe it was like PC Gamer Show or something like that, but I can remember seeing it at whatever event it was and thinking, that's exactly what I'm looking for, and then just never playing it through its early access. And then I didn't realise how cheap it was going to be, and it was like, it's £12 at the moment, so bang on.
You waited to the right moment, really.
Exactly. Well, that's enough games for now. Why don't we talk about some TV, or what would you call it, TV, film? Let's call it art, because that's probably the only thing you can really call it. Bo Burnham's Inside dropped on Netflix last
Sunday,
week, I think it was. And I've been a fan of his as well. I haven't loved everything he's done, but I...
You're talking about What? Because that, I watched What on Saturday.
Yeah, What is
the day before. And that has not, that has aged like bad milk.
Some jokes have aged badly, but he kind of, do you know, he addresses that in his more recent shows. I think Make Happy, his live special, is very good. The one he did before Inside. And, of course, he directed Eighth Grade, which I know you particularly love, Matt. I enjoy that one quite a lot as well.
So is he primarily a comedian? Because I only watched Promising Young Woman like maybe a few weeks ago, and I saw him in that. And that was the first time I've ever seen him.
He acts in that. He's just an entertainer. Like, he is primarily
an artist.
He's a comedian slash musician, I suppose you'd call him. He started on YouTube when he was like 16, I think.
Right,
and that's
where
he first got spotted. But yeah, he's mainly, I would say, known for doing the like live comedy slash music shows. Although he did stop about 5 years doing that. 5 years ago doing that. But his most recent special, if you haven't seen it already, is one of the best things I've seen in a long time. It's called Inside. It is filmed over the course of the past year during the pandemic, and I don't know, I've actually done much research to know if he did genuinely live in this one room for a whole house
Surely not.
Whole year while making, I'm pretty sure he didn't, but
it's
that's
a studio apartment, basically. It's a one room studio apartment, and that man earns too much money to be living in that.
I'm sure he didn't, but still the concept of it is strong. Basically, he's in this one room for a year, and he's basically shot, written, recorded, edited this whole thing in this room by himself. Although I did look at the credits and it says other people did editing and stuff, so I don't know if that's all true. But basically, it's this music, it's an hour and 20 minutes, like comedy slash music sort of weird thing for an hour and 20 minutes, which at times is funny, at times is just genuinely good music.
Yeah.
And at times it's just deeply sad and self-reflective. So... It's
an overall, like, musical, funny, deep experience.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's the sort of thing, like with a lot of things, a lot of people just won't like what that sort of thing is instantly and turn off. Like, I do remember talking about What the first time I really watched this stuff was What, and I did kind of turn off of it a bit because I found his voice very annoying. But it's got less high-pitched and whiny as years have gone on, I think.
And the other thing is like, What is incredibly... It's got elements of edgelord to it, because he uses words in there that he knows is not right, and I do like that there's a... Is it a song he does, or is it just like a monologue that he does in Inside where he's talking about... He recognises that as a younger man, he just said offensive shit because he thought it was funny, and he's... understands now why. That's the introspective stuff, which I think is
very
good.
That's one of the more poignant moments of it, is like him turning 30 during this pandemic, and
yeah, basically just self-reflecting on what has he done to this point, which I think we can all kind of relate to in some way. Yeah, it's just, there's not much more to say about it, because I don't want to analyse it, because that would do it a disservice, I think. It's just saying you watch and take in, and yeah, just, I would recommend anyone watch it, really. You may not be into it, but...
Are the musical elements, like, similar to, like, Flight of the Conchords kind of stuff, or is it...
It's kind of yes, kind of no.
Right.
Yeah, it's more just weird. Like, it's a lot of it's weird. Like, the Jeffrey Bezos song is very short, but very good.
Okay.
I think there's... So, what I'll say to anybody, because it's not... You know how a lot of stand-up has kind of like a through thread where they start with an idea and it goes off on lots of tangents, but ultimately the show...
Yeah.
Really, the only core to it is just a man struggling with just being locked away for a year.
Okay.
But that means that a lot of it kind of has an element of internet humor to it, because obviously when you're locked away for a year, we've all had to turn to the internet. So from the moment, like about 20 minutes into it, when he starts doing a section on brands and kind of like the way that brands speak to the world, which is really fun but cutting, from that moment on, it just becomes absolute, like, it's platinum grade comedy.
Yeah, you don't know what's coming. That's like, it goes from song to... It's, to be fair, it's probably closer to a live album than if, and it's pretty much wall-to-wall music.
How long is it?
Hour like 20.
An hour and 20.
Okay.
I'd recommend it a lot. There will be bits probably where you're like, I'm not into this bit, but then the next thing will happen. Like, it's moving so quickly that from minute to minute something new is happening. That
I haven't seen any of his stuff before. Like, I've watched 8th Grade. I didn't realise he directed it. And obviously,
Amrosa, I think.
Directed it. Yeah, so, but... yeah, watch this, because this is unlike pretty much anything you'll watch. I think it's fantastic. Speaking of more things, I just said that's one of the best things I've watched in a long time. Another one of the best things I've watched in a long time is Mayor of Easttown, which I deliberately waited so it finished last weekend. There were 7 episodes in total. I deliberately waited until last weekend so I could just binge it all in one go. And luckily I managed to avoid all spoilers for it. But if you don't know what Mayor of Easttown is, it's a HBO show with Kate Winslet starring in it. And she's basically a detective in a small Pennsylvanian town where something horrible has occurred and we've got to work out who did it. It's one of those shows. It's very much, if you're familiar with Broadchurch, the British show, it is basically Pennsylvanian Broadchurch in the best way possible. It is largely bleak. But what I will say is it's genuinely very funny at times. Jean Smart, who plays Kate Winslet's mum in it, is basically comedy relief throughout, and she's very good in it.
Jean Smart is excellent in everything she's in.
She's so good. She has some great like fart jokes and stuff. Like, it shouldn't work, but it does work very well. Like, all the acting in it, it's just like proper premium HBO grade stuff. And
how long are the episodes?
Only 7 episodes. So,
but how long are they?
Oh, like 50 minutes to an hour. Yeah. So it's just very good. And it's one of those where it's 7 episodes, hopefully one and done wrapped, like they don't make any more, because it just finishes perfectly in a great way. And where a lot of these shows do maybe falter in when it's like a big old, like, whodunit, like, is the end. And it's like, everyone's disappointed. Whereas this just absolutely nails it and is so smart and quite heartbreaking in every way possible. So, you know, if you want a bleak detective drama, it's on Now TV or Sky Atlantic if you have that over here.
I honestly thought it was like a period drama because of the name, because I haven't looked at anything.
You saw Kate Winslet and you thought it's a period drama.
I didn't even know she was in it. I just saw the name and I was like, that sounds like some kind of English period drama or something, but it sounds far better than that.
No, it's a crime drama set in modern day Pennsylvania. But yeah, can't recommend that enough. Those are all our recommendations for things you may basically have missed. So, yeah. Should we do an endless search?
Why not? Inside, in the UK, IGN crew. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we coming through. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Is it endless search?
I've got a quiz this week, and I thought I'd bring one back that we haven't done in a while. The Endless Starch. Do we all remember what the Endless Starch is?
Genuinely, no.
Okay. Oh, this well, is the Portmanteau sure people... one, isn't it? Oh.
No, it's not quite that one. That's Portmanteau Overwatch, so yeah. It's a different game. Endless Starch is where I've got 5 different games here where I've changed one letter in the name of that game. And I've got a clue that hints to what that game is and what the changed name of that one is. So I think my example is always, like, rodents... Like, take on rodents in an open-world Florida game, and that would be GTA My City, for example. Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit.
There's only 5 of them, so it shouldn't last too long. I mean, I wrote this morning. I don't think they're too difficult. But here we go. And they're all, like, there's no obscure games, and they're all big games, okay?
Is it so, just first to buzz in wins?
Yep. First to, there's 5 of them. Best of 5. All right, Matt, let's do it.
You got this.
Okay, first one is, an assassin has a bad case of the runs and must make his way around an island to use 8 different toilets before time runs out.
Death poop?
It is death poop.
Right.
I thought Matt might get that one, because he loves poop. No, he loves death poop.
Childish.
That's that one was good. To Matt. There we go. Do you understand what was going on there, Jesse?
That's the first step.
Okay, cool. There we go. Here's the second one. This one might require a bit of geographical knowledge for you. A young woman with the ability to rewind time returns to her hometown located on an eastern peninsula of Scotland.
Oh, man.
I feel like Matt has the game.
I know the game, yeah.
Do you know the game, Jesse? A young woman with the ability to rewind time returns home. To an eastern peninsula of Scotland.
Oh, okay.
How good is your Scottish geography?
Fucking dog shite, mate.
If we've got what's the game, Matt?
Is it?
Oh, go on.
I know it's Life is Strange, isn't it?
It is Life is Strange.
It's life, isn't it? Is the word that you've changed.
It may be.
Yeah.
And I've changed one letter in that 4 letter word.
It's on the tip of my tongue.
It's more entertaining to watch Matt figure this out, as I know I have no chance.
A 4 letter Scottish place.
I know. It's like I can hear it in my head, but I can't figure out which one it is. I'm so sorry to anybody from Scotland, but I've never been to what looks like an absolutely beautiful country, so I'm not very good at it.
Maybe it's Fife football. It is Fife.
Fife is Strange.
Fife is Strange.
There we go.
Yeah. Fife. Ever heard of Fife, Jesse?
No.
To be fair, it's probably one unless you watch like Soccer Saturday and see East Fife have scored.
All right.
It's probably football links into geography a lot, doesn't it? So
that's true.
It's fine. It's 2-0 to Matt with a helping hand, but that's fine. You've still got time though. 3 more to go if you get all 3.
Oh, great! That's going to happen, isn't it?
Here's the next game. Here's the pitch for it, the blurb. There are no apples left on Earth. Desperately searching for some to ferment, groups of 3 must loot and shoot their way around Enoch to find some more.
Okay.
I must know this game.
I think Matt's got the game. I think he's got it.
I've fucking forgotten the name of the game.
No, he's forgotten the name of the game that came out this year.
This
that we
year.
Played a lot of.
That I decided I didn't like. I've tried to purge it from my memory.
A three-player loot and shooter that came out this year. Jesse.
Wait, did we all play it?
I think you might have played it for a little... Yeah, you did play it for a little bit, yeah. Yeah, you did.
Is it Outsiders?
What? Yeah, so it is Outsider with a C.
Outsider.
Yes,
it's Outriders. The apples ferment become cider.
Yes.
Oh, outsider.
Outsider. There we go. They were on Enoch to try and make cider again.
Yeah, I deliberately forgot about that name since I checked back on my save yesterday and my character's still dead, so.
Have you still not got your inventory restored on Outriders?
I don't give a shit about that game anymore, man.
That's come and gone, unfortunately. It's 3-0 to Matt. Come on, let's not make it a clean sweep, Jesse. Come on.
It is 100% going to happen, man.
There's 2 more. Come on.
All right. Okay.
Right, here we go. Aloe vera, lavender, and sandalwood supplies are at an all-time low. People need to keep clean, but also want to smell good. Travel to the lentil region to find the nicest scented monster and gather their fragrance. Oh, have we got what this could be?
I have like two games in mind of what it could potentially be.
Oh, I'll just repeat that for anyone who didn't. Okay. Aloe vera, lavender, and sandalwood. For example, just for examples, supplies are at an all-time low. People need to keep clean, but they also want to smell good. Travel the lentil region to find the nicest scented monster and gather their fragrance. So what sort of... You want it, something that could clean you, but is scented? I don't know. The lentil region, does that mean anything? That's L-E-N-T-A-L, not lentils, as in the pulse.
Can I ask what the game is? So can I try and lock the game?
If you want to confirm that, yeah, go on.
Monster Hunter Rise?
It's absolutely not, no.
No.
Is it Pokemon Snap?
Then? Jesse, there we go. It's a sign that could be... The game is new Pokemon Snap.
So but is what, it new it Pokemon changed? Soap?
It is new Pokemon Soap.
Fuck, I'm there probably we go. Get that one.
They're trying to find something to replace sandalwood in soap. So they're trying to find, I don't know, could a Totodile be a good smelling? What's the nicest smelling? Jigglypuff?
No, I don't think
it's. What about one of the, like, the grass ones? There's like flower Pokemon and shit.
Chikorita might smell quite. Bayleaf.
Is that actually one called Bayleaf?
So, it's up from Chikorita, isn't it? Bayleaf.
Yeah. Yeah, and you put a bay leaf in a curry, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm. Well, you wouldn't eat it, though.
No, take them out. Yeah, take them out. Yeah, if I find one of those in there, turn straight out. Just like cardamom cods. Tastes like soap. Not
accidentally ate a cardamom pod once, too long ago, like 3 months ago.
Don't get me started on those devil seeds. right, one more. You could have.
So disappointed with myself.
You've let yourself down. You've come in with an attitude of defeatism. And yeah. You've carried it through.
I need to be more positive.
Yeah, well, how about this one? Here we go. One more. Battle for a post-apocalypse full of robo-dinosaurs to secure a prohibited citrus flourish.
I mean, the game's obvious, isn't it, but...
Is it? It's one or two, isn't it? Battle for a post-apocalypse full of robo-dinosaurs to secure a prohibited citrus flourish. Well, what do you think the game is, Jesse?
I mean, it has to be Horizon Forbidden West.
Oh, it's Horizon Forbidden Zest.
Oh, shit.
There we go. Do you know what? I'll give Jesse a... 0.2 of a point there for helping out. So you're not going away completely empty-handed, but that does mean it's 4.8 to 0.2 to Matt. But, you know, there we go. We all had fun, didn't we?
Genuinely, the last two, for me, yes.
You were getting a handle on it, you know, and it's a shame it's come to an end.
Too slowly.
That's fine. But, yeah, that was a nice bit of endless search. As usual, send them in. We're kind of running low. We do keep some in the back pocket, though, so keep them coming to IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com. But for now, let's read some of your feedback.
Mm. Right. Matt. I have got one here from Alex Madison, who says, "Hi, lads. Hope this email finds you well and that you have all been respecting the sea."
I have. I mean, I haven't seen the sea in about 18 months now.
Yes, I cannot remember the last time I saw any. But yeah. I keep it in my heart and mind and keep it respected.
Mm. Exactly.
I enjoyed hearing Cardi read out the very legitimate-sounding tale of woe that we received in the feedback inbox last week.
Yeah, we haven't heard from Princess Samantha since we hoped her wicked stepmother. Just listen to a podcast, mate. It was good fun.
I talk to you guys every day. I don't need to listen to you for an
yes,
hour.
Yes, you do, because you will learn so much about how to be a better person from listening to this podcast. Basically, we had an email from Princess Samantha, who's currently being held semi-hostage in Burkina Faso by a wicked stepmother and uncle.
I thought this was the spam email you got.
It was a phishing email.
They want us to like transfer like £10.50 or something. I can't remember what it was.
That's not a lot.
I know. Might be worth the risk. But anyway, we haven't heard back from her since. We're hoping she's safe.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, that email reminded Alex of an email he received a few years back. Mm. It was 2015 or 16, the year eludes me, but I was in the break room at work checking my phone when I happened upon an email that piqued my interest. It began with, "Dear Value Client." So I immediately flagged it as a potential scam email and called some colleagues over so I could read it out to them. We all giggled at the strangely structured sentences written in broken English as I continued to read the contents aloud. Something about how they pride themselves with giving people what they need and that there had been a terrible accident which would prevent them from fulfilling the promise. It stated that there had been a plane crash over a small mountain village, wiping out many of the occupants of the village and all flight staff on board. At this point, we were all astounded at how elaborate this story had become, wondering who would come up with such a bleak story and what their game was. Then I read on, and it said something that stopped me in my tracks. There was an order reference, an item description, and a payment amount listed. This was for an order of controller parts I placed online. They said that they had refunded me, so I checked my bank account, and there it was. I then Googled the village and some keywords and found multiple news stories about this crash. Needless to say, I was gobsmacked. The plane carrying my controller parts had legitimately crashed and killed people, and Jesse is laughing his tits off.
It's not that funny, is it, Jesse? Come on, stop laughing.
This is awful.
The setup made me laugh, and then I feel bad, and now I'm just laughing and I can't stop. I'm sorry.
Anyway, somewhere amongst the rubble, there could be a small package with my name on it. The thought still haunts me. It haunts him, Jesse!
Oh, man. Listen, I'm not laughing because it's funny. It's more of like a nervous, like, why am I laughing? I can't control it.
The guilt that washed over me was extreme. I had just spent the last few minutes laughing about the contents of the email, only to realise I'd been laughing at an actual tragedy.
Jesse. Turn on the news, Jesse, and just laugh. Do you do that?
No.
Sorry this doesn't have a happier ending, but hey, that's life, I guess. While respecting the sea is obviously essential, this story reminds us that we must also pay similar respect to the skies. All the best from Alex.
You should definitely respect the sky, because you never know what's going to fall from it. I mean,
could be Chinese rockets. That's a bit out of date these days, but...
It could be. I mean, only today we've had rain. So, yeah, you never know what's amazing. Next. If anything, the sky is more unpredictable than the sea.
But there's not so many terrors in the sky.
Lots of terrors
in the sea.
No, you don't really have many, I would hesitate to say, whereas you may have many near drowning stories like we've done, you don't have near many crash stories. Like, if a plane, you either crash or you fly safe, like, there's not as many crash stories, are there? I don't know.
There's when Nigel Farage came down in helicopter or...
Yeah, well, that was, you know... That was an unfortunate
set of experiences.
Yeah. Could have gone one way, went the other. Of course, there's Sully, the Tom Hanks film, which is, I believe, about 60% nonsense compared to what actually happened. But it's still a fun story. He did land the plane, but almost everything after that happens in the film didn't happen. So, you know, it's still a fun enough film. But yeah, we should respect the skies. Alex, you're very right.
Yes.
I've got an email here from Khalil who says, "Hi boys, loving the podcast. In fact, this is the first time I've written into one of these things. What a time to do it. Anyways, here is a gaming related question. My first ever console was a Sega Master System back in 1992 when I was a teenager. My first ever game with it was Hang On and Astro Warrior. I don't know Hang On. Which was two games on one cartridge. I'm probably showing my old age now. I think you might be, Khalil. I'm sorry. So my question is, what was your first ever gaming console and what were your first ever games with it? Keep up the great work. Love the banter and always look forward to my Friday commute home. Listen to the podcast. As someone who cannot swim, I cannot emphasize enough, respect the sea. Yours sincerely, Khalil from London. It wasn't really my first gaming console, but my dad had an NES when I was like... I had that. Like, I've got baby pictures of me wrestling with the wires of that when I was like months old. So that was the first console I played with, and I remember playing loads of games and that thing. So I remember playing like Mario 1, 2, 3. I remember really enjoying the Hook game. There was a game for Hook.
Track and Field I played a lot. The Top Gun game, I could never get far in that. That was difficult.
Yeah,
it was an NES with all sorts of games. Mario Golf, that was a big one. We've got a new Mario Golf coming in a few weeks, and I'm very excited because always got a soft spot for Mario Golf. So I suppose, yeah, the NES. And then I was kind of a, this may be a news to you boys, I was kind of a PC boy until I was like 12 or 13. Like I didn't, even older actually, probably more like 14, 15. Like I had a PC. I didn't have a PS1 or an N64, GameCube, any of those. Like my first console, I went from NES to PS2. So I kind of missed I had a Game Boy Advance. So yeah. I had handheld, but
was that like a family PC?
Yeah, I played games in it. Like I play PC games. Like I used to play FIFA on PC with a keyboard, which is mad to me now. Thinking
mad,
of that,
yeah,
yeah. But I could do it. That's why I have all. That's why growing up, I played all the point and clicks and like had Football Manager. And,
okay,
like I used to play like games like Civ and Cossacks. Do you remember Cossacks? Mm-hmm. I played that a lot. Yeah. That was difficult. So yeah, I was really PC growing up, and then yeah, just always wanted a PlayStation, but never had a PlayStation 1, just a 2.
Fair enough.
So yeah. You'd think that mine would be a PC, but it actually wasn't.
God, we're in reverse.
I know, right? So my first console was a Sega Mega Drive, the 16-bit version, not the 32-bit version. So it was the one which had got like a big crank on the side, and then a big heavy button that was on the left of the console. I had that. My dad bought me that because I wanted to play the Toy Story game. Yes. So the Toy Story game wasn't quite out when he got it me. So the first game I think I ever played was, I think it was called Mickey's Magic Castle. Like, possibly. It was a game where you played as both Mickey Mouse or you could play as Donald Duck, and you got like a magic cape, and you could, it was 2D platformer, very
right,
much
yeah, stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Classic Disney interactive fare. Like, that might have actually been made by Traveller's Tales. I remember the Traveller's Tale logo from that point a lot with the, remember what it used to be? Was it a little rabbit, was it, that was on a toadstool with a knapsack or something like that?
I can't remember.
Classic old school. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but, so when the Toy Story game came out, I played through all of that and then basically didn't play games for years. I say years, for 2 years it would have been, because that came out when I was in year two. It felt a long time, but yeah, I wasn't hugely into games early in my childhood. Used to like action figures a lot more and watching films and stuff like that. And then my dad got us a PC when I was in year four. And I had Toy Story Activity Center on that. And then then I got into Creatures, if you remember the Creatures games.
Yeah, they were Creatures.
They were made by Cambridge, like a lab in Cambridge, as an AI experiment that then it became a video game. Mm-hmm. And then my dad bought me the Monkey Island games, and I got massive into point and clicks. And then, yeah, I wouldn't have an actual console until the PlayStation 2 came out.
There we go. We're not too far away from being kindred spirits. You knew that.
Mm.
Jesse, what sordid youth did you have playing horror games at the age of four?
That didn't exactly happen. Like my first system, like overall, it was just like, you know, a family console, was the N64. My first ever memory of a game is walking into my living room and seeing my older brother play Ocarina of Time for the first time. And I thought he was like watching a cartoon or something. And I distinctly remember seeing Ectron. I was like, what the fuck is this? I didn't say that, obviously, because I was tiny. But it was just amazing. I remember.
I can imagine that.
I think it was like maybe the next Christmas after my mum and I went to Woolworths, I think. And N64 games, they came in like cardboard like boxes, right? And
with reds around the edge.
Yeah, and I remember getting Pokemon Snap, Duke Nukem 64, and GoldenEye, I think. And that was like the first ever system we had as a console and stuff. But you mentioned the first horror game. I think that was on the PlayStation 2, and that might have been, I think it's called Ghost Hunter. I think that was the first PlayStation, I think that was the first horror game I ever played, and it was genuinely terrifying. Played it a year ago and it was complete shit. Yeah, the N64 is the first console I played, and I still have my OG N64 to this very day. Somehow still alive.
There we go. Isn't that lovely? Isn't it fun to look back? Because who knows what's in the future? You can always pick the good things out of the past, because you never know what's coming up. Could be all bad. That's how I look at life. Jesse, we've got one more piece of feedback, which is something we can all look forward to.
Exactly. This is from Jeff Smith. He says, "What's up, boys? Now that we're in June, I'm officially pumped as fuck for E3.
Who as isn't, Jeff?
I know. As much as people are saying to temper your expectations because of the pandemic and yada, 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 I can't help it. I have a problem. I love getting hype and excited for video games press I love getting excited for video game press conferences. There we go. I've been that way since I was a boy. My question to the lads is, what's one announcement that officially hasn't come out that that would blow your conkers straight off? Ooh. Mine would be a remake of Simpsons Hit and Run getting announced at Summer Games Fest by Saber Interactive, a gem from my childhood. Keep up the good
that
work.
That is bizarrely and always specific.
RTS. I mean, that is a banging game. That was like my first GTA.
I would love to play Simpsons Hit and Run again, or dare I say, even some sort of sequel, some sort of bigger version of it. But getting remade by Saber Interactive and being shown at Summer Games Fest, that is bizarrely specific. So if that happens, Jeff, I've got questions.
Yeah, I did look into this to see if this rumor actually existed, and I couldn't find it. So it is just, Jeff, you have clearly a love for the developers of World War Z, and Summer Games Fest is key.
Spread
keys,
the
right?
rumor. Let's make that.
I mean, we haven't had a good Simpsons game in like years.
I assume people do still watch it quite a bit, and I'm out of touch, but you know, it's not at its peak anymore, is it? But they still make it, so people must still watch it. I don't know if there is a clamoring for, I mean, there'll still be people who want to play a new Simpsons game, but I'd happily, just if you just re-released Hit and Run, I'd play again. I love that game. I could probably,
what are some things that would blow your mind if it were to be announced?
I'm gonna have like one realistic one. And well, something we know's coming, and I want to see, and something maybe just out there. But this is a very personal one for me. I want to see the War for Wakanda expansion for Marvel's Avengers.
God,
no, bear with me for this, because I want it to look. It's more me hoping. This is out of hope that it looks amazing, and it's like 6 hours of story content, and it looks like beautiful. And it gets that game going again, because I want to love that game so much, Matt.
In this expansion, have they stripped the loot system out of it? Because
I don't.
That's got to go.
I am like genuinely disappointed. Like, that sounds like the perfect game to me, and then it came out, and I was like, "This is far from it, man."
Mm-hmm. But, well, linked to my other one would be there are these rumors swirling around that have been for a while now that Eidos Montreal are making a Guardians of the Galaxy game, which is. I'm intrigued by that. I want to know what sort of game that is. Like,
Are there any rumors as to what kind of game it is?
Sort of thing. Yeah, like, I just want a campaign game. I don't know if that's what we'll get.
If they were going to do that, I'd like it a campaign game, but it's 4-player co-op. So, like, person can be Drax, one can be Star-Lord, one can be Gamora, one can be, like, Groot with Rocket on his back or something
more
like that.
Yeah, more like what Gotham Knights or Suicide Squad seems to be, or even more. So, do you know what? A lot of games recently, these looter shooters have come out, and it's made me appreciate the Borderlands games a lot more, because they don't.
Well, I don't want
issues.
The loot. I'm so done with loot.
I don't need the loot. But the way that Borderlands do a co-op campaign, I think, is generally quite good. Like, you do a big old story together. The way they do that is very good, and I want. Yeah, if it was that sort of thing, but Guardians, maybe.
I would want just like a linear kind of fun co-op game. Like, if it was It Takes Two, but Guardians and just fun and long, then I'd be fucking happy.
Mm-hmm. And another one, just please tell us when Lego Star Wars, the Skywalker Saga is coming out. I want to play that game
good,
so much.
Yeah.
What
about you, Matt?
The kind of thing that would just blow my conker straight off, as Jeff points it. Like, And this just isn't going to happen, but if they were like, Final Fantasy VII Remake has done so well, we're going to show you Final Fantasy Remake Part 2, which you know is coming, but we're also going to remake Final Fantasy VIII, like, that would be fucking massive for me. But that's never going to happen.
Is Final Fantasy VIII like a big fan favorite? Because I know
that's it. That's the reason why it's the game that really could have done with a remake more than 7, because... Yeah. It's got such potential, but it doesn't quite come across properly in the original version. But that world would look incredible, and those characters are amazing. Like, it's a brilliant story. It's just that not everything fits together properly. It could have done with just a another pass on that draft just to make the story elements work together better. And also the mechanics are a bit obscure in that one. And like a new pass where it was made better would be great. And also you've got guns that are swords in that game. Why wouldn't you want to play it again?
Yeah.
But that would be amazing. We're not going to get it. There's this big rumor that there's like a Souls-style Final Fantasy game. If that's real, I'd be into that. I want to see
how... There have been Final Fantasy fighting games before and stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's been like there's the Dissidia games, which are kind of like, I suppose, slightly Tekken-ish. I'm interested to see what Final Fantasy's like done in different genres. I can't see how a Soulsy-style game fits with Final Fantasy, but if that thing is real, I'm fascinated to know what that is.
A lot of Final Fantasy, yeah.
But my main thing that I want to see is like whatever Arkane Austin are working on. Like, if they are part of the Bethesda show this year, I've thought long and hard about what might be at Bethesda. It's definitely not Elder Scrolls because we know they've got to get Starfield out of the way first. Yeah. It still feels like we might get a teaser trailer for Starfield. I don't think we're going to see that game this year.
Yeah,
what I do think
we might
see.
Get a new Fallout. I think really not necessarily Fallout 5, but like a more New Vegas. What if Arkane Austin are making a Fallout spin-off?
No, no.
No,
you fool.
No. And sorry, I had one more that was before we move on to Jess's. That's just, I'm more intrigued. I want to know what the hell Ken Levine has been doing since Bioshock.
Like, still haven't played a Bioshock.
Surely he's
game.
Got something interesting. Surely he's doing something.
Do you think, though, do you think he's going to have teamed up with a big publisher that would bring it to E3?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because he's not 2K anymore, right? Because I think there's a chance. 2K are there this year, we know that, I think. But like, is the, we know there's this new Bioshock in development, like that's kind of become an open enough secret. No, it's not him.
I'd be interested to see that. Speaking of 2K, like I want to see how much different GTA 5 is going to look on PS5, like how much of a new experience it is. And yeah, just talk about Ken Levine. I could see Ken Levine just turning up at like Microsoft show.
I could see him turning up at Keighley's. I get this impression, you know, that Ken wants to be out of the studio system, because I can only imagine that whatever Ken Levine would make next would be bonkers, and therefore like he'd have to do it on his own dime, which he's probably got enough of. So I could see him turning up at something like Keighley. If that happens this year, I will probably lose my shit.
It's been Bioshock Infinite was 8 years ago now?
Something like 2013, yeah.
Yeah. God, I just want... Yeah. Please, just show me. Jesse, what do you want, apart from Star Wars and Resident Evil?
Well, I mean, it's related to horror, obviously. And it's just Silent Hill. Like, I never
anything
got a chance...
Silent Hill.
Literally anything. Just anything Silent Hill. I didn't get a chance to play Silent Hills. I didn't have a PS4 back when that was out and stuff. And I'm like relatively new just to the Silent Hill franchise. I always loved Resident Evil growing up, but it was only like maybe 4 or 5 years ago when I actually played through all the Silent Hill games. And, you know, wow, these are absolutely amazing, especially the Silent Hill 1, 2, and 3. Like, for me, Silent Hill has been dead since 2004 with Silent Hill 4, because all the other games, Origins, Homecoming, Downpour, they are not good horror games. And
I thought people like the one that was, wasn't it Sam Barlow did one of them?
Was that Shattered Memories on the Wii?
Yeah, that's
that,
the one that's
that
got
had
the
a mixed
psychology
reception
test,
because
right?
It had like a retelling of Silent Hill 1, and people were a bit iffy with that because, you know, everyone loves that. But I don't know. I want to see a new Silent Hill. I don't know whether or not I would want to, if I'd want to see a reboot or like a sequel or just even a remake. I'm not too sure, but just having a Silent Hill game with, you know, current gen PS5, like the tech we have now for an actual horror game would just be amazing. You know, if it wasn't constrained by, you know, the past generations of consoles and stuff, just to have a proper exclusive horror game, you know, done by like a fantastic Japanese development studio, just that we haven't seen that in years.
We'll
and
see
then
what Kojima's doing next. Do you think it'll be Silent Hill?
What is he doing next?
We don't know. That's the thing.
See, that's the thing. Like, there's so many variables in there because Kojima obviously
wouldn't want him to do a horror game, to be honest. Because
I think he could do an incredible horror game. Like, if there's one thing I like about Kojima's stuff, is just the creepiness of everything he does.
I want a shout out here to one of my favorite podcasts, which is The Back Page. Recently did an episode where the two hosts decided what, if they were publishers, what companies mm-hmm. they'd own and what E3 show they'd do. And Samuel Roberts said Kojima would be one of his companies, Kojima Productions, because yeah. he wants him to do a stealth horror game. That sounds my bag. Like, Kojima doing a stealth horror. Yes, please.
That's what I was hoping Death Stranding would be before, you know, all the information, mm-hmm. like, before it actually came out. I just kind of wanted, like, oh, like a linear, somewhat linear, just horror stealth game. That would have been fantastic. But yeah, we haven't seen Silent Hill properly in years. Like, the latest one was, like, what, a pachinko machine? But Konami have recently been doing a few things, like Heather from Silent Hill 3 was in Death by Daylight and stuff. So they're slowly starting to roll out some Silent Hill stuff. And hopefully this is leading to a new game.
I'm crossing my fingers for you, Jesse, because I want it to happen for you.
And I mean, I don't just want horror just to be Resident Evil as, like, you know, mm-hmm. the big mm-hmm. thing, because as much as I love Resident Evil, that is a completely different style of horror to what Silent Hill offers
yeah.
and stuff. But, like, I guess my dream, like, my silly pick for a game would be, like, seeing, like, the Time Crisis trilogy in VR. Or something, because I want to, like, I genuinely love light gun games, and they kind of died with the Wii, really. And, like, VR to me is, like, the perfect platform to revive those. Like, give me, like, Time Crisis, give me Virtual Cop, give me House of the Dead in VR. That would be perfect.
That's what Pistol Whip is, isn't it, really? That's a light gun game in VR.
Yeah, but it's like it's a musical one as well. Yeah. Like, I love rhythm games as well, but just fucking give me either Silent Hill or Forbidden Siren, and I'll be the happiest lad alive.
There we go. I should preface this. I have absolutely no information on if there is a new Silent Hill. I know nothing about it. But I have a feeling, Jesse. I have a feeling for you in the next couple of weeks.
You've had feelings all day. That's yeah. all you've been feelings. All day. I've got feelings.
I've always got feelings. I'm a very feelingful person.
I am concerned, though, that like after how the medium played and stuff, because there were rumors flying around that Bloober team might be doing like a new Silent Hill game and like they ventured into horror quite a few times, and I just don't think they've ever been strong enough to pull off a Silent Hill experience, especially after the medium. Like, I don't know, man, it's just concerning.
Mm-hmm. I think if Konami is going to do anything, because obviously they've been dormant essentially, yeah. like they've been dormant, I think in the era of remakes, it would be a Metal Gear Solid remake and a Silent Hill 2 remake. I could see them doing that because it's
yeah.
sort of easy money on the table.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if Resident Evil could like come from the brink with like Resident Evil 5 and 6, which are like, you know, they're fun co-op games, but as Resident Evil, as horror games, they're kind of not great. Like, if Resident Evil can come back so strong with, you know, a few remakes and, you know, Village, which is fantastic, Konami have to have a team somewhere that could just nail down a Metal Gear Solid or Silent Hill remake. It would print cash instantly. Like, just fucking do it, please.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that was a fun time. I'm hopeful for you. Like I said, I'm feeling it for you. Let's get Silent Hill made by Ken Levine. How about that?
I'd play it.
Yeah, cool. That was a good, fun episode. I feel like we've got to play Bo Burnham's Jeffrey Bezos song on the way out here. I think that's the only way to do it. I hope everyone enjoys. I think next Friday, E3 starts next Friday, so we'll probably do maybe we'll have different people on next week. We'll talk more about what people would like to see and then how wrong we'll all be. So that'll be fun. but yeah, Ratchet and Clank's out next Friday, so we can hopefully talk a bit about that, and hopefully it's a good game. And yeah, we'll have a lovely time. Until
goodbye,
then,
everyone.
Goodbye.
See ya.
Look at you now, Zuckerberg and Gates and Buffett. Amateurs can fucking suck it, fuck their wives, drink their blood. Come on, Jeff, get 'em!
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.